I'm Ronnie Allen, and it's my pleasure to present a man who doesn't have a big head, but he sure wears a lot of hats. He's been a disc jockey, record producer, recording artist, songwriter, publisher, record company owner, record company executive. Did I leave anything out, Jerry Granahan?
Yeah, I won the Kentucky Derby. Let's see what else I did.
Oh, you did? What horse?
The horse was called...
Dickie Doo?
Dickie Doo, yeah.
Okay. You were the only person that ever recorded in a group where you were opposites. You were Dickie Doo and you were the Don'ts.
Yes.
Which is amazing. Yes. You were also Jerry Grant at some point in your career.
You want me to start naming those names off?
Name a couple. Name a few names. Go ahead. Be a name dropper.
Tony Rome, Christopher Sunday, you name it.
You weren't Johnny Monday and Billy Tuesday?
No, I didn't get to that.
But the very beginning, you were a disc jockey at a radio station. I'm reading the liner notes. We're going to be talking quite a bit about a new CD that came out, which is called Caprice with an exclamation point. It's actually the story behind Jerry Granahan's Caprice label, 1960 through 1963. And it includes an unreleased duet by Janie Grant and Jerry Granahan. We're going to play that unreleased duet, at least one side of it, a little bit later on. Actually, there was two sides. It was an acetate. It was never released. You and Janie Grant had some fun in the studio. But let's not put the cart before the horse. Let's start at the very beginning, and we're going to move forward as quickly as possible, get a lot of music tonight, and who knows, maybe some surprises. Not all of them planned, of course. You were born in Pittston, Pennsylvania. That's not Pittsburgh. That's Pittston.
Yeah, correct. That's like northeastern Pennsylvania. That's probably about an hour and 45 minutes in Philadelphia. Northeast, up Scranton, Wilkes-Barre way, Pocono Mountains.
You were a teenage disc jockey at radio station WPTS.
Correct.
What kind of station was it?
It was a small, sun-up, sundown station. I started doing sports just to help a friend of mine out who was a disc jockey, and then he left for bigger things, and then I just took over.
So how long were you a disc jockey?
I was there for about maybe a year. I was also a boy band singer with a 20-piece local orchestra.
Just a small band, right? 20 pieces?
Yeah. And we used to do the Pocono Mountains and all that type of stuff.
20 pieces? That's almost like a big band. It's like a medium band. It's not a big band.
It was considered a big band back there,
Okay.
But in those days, you were competing against, Harry James, Sammy Kay, all those big-name bands.
Yeah, so we're talking about the early 50s now, right?
Yes, right.
Eventually, in 1957, we're going to get to 57 real quick. You were using the name Jerry Grant and the Rockabilly Bandits.
Yes. Back then they thought that Granahan was a little ethnic, so rather than having everybody ask me to sing Danny Boy, they took the Irish connotation out and just cut it down to Grant.
So you were Jerry Grant, and when you were Jerry Grant, it was J-E-R-R-Y.
Right, right.
The spelling of Jerry Granahan is G-E-R-R-Y.
Right.
And you actually got a recording contract with Atco Records.
I believe I was the first Caucasian on Atco. It was a rhythm and blues label.
They had acts like the Coasters.
They had Ruth Brown. So I was the very first white person they signed, and the second one they signed was an Italian kid named Bobby Darin.
Walden Robert Cassato.
Correct.
And you had a debut record which was called Talking About Love.
Yeah, I did a couple of records. What they did back then was they would split dates with Bobby and I. I would do two songs and he would do two songs. And it got to be tough because the producer didn't know who to give what song to who, so they decided that they were going to drop one of us. So they had a meeting, and they decided to drop Bobby. But in the meantime, I had written and recorded Click Clack, and I was happy to get off the label, and so they kept Bobby.
I understand that Click Clack was inspired when you and a couple of other people were riding home on the New York subway system.
A friend of mine was a drummer for Buddy Knox and the Rhythm Orchids. His name is Dave Aldred. He and I had dropped a couple of girls off in Brooklyn. We were coming back into Manhattan, and the train was making a noise, and we were tapping our feet. He was hitting his hands on the railing, and I started writing a song, and by the time we got back to the apartment, the song was done.
And it was called Click Clack.
Yep.
Now, how did you get the name Dickie Doo and the Don'ts? I read that Dick Clark may have had something to do with it.
What happened was he used to use the expression Dickie Doo, and in my act, I used to do a little risque thing about the name Dickie. I won't get into that. But anyhow, I was in Philadelphia doing one of my Atco records on his Philadelphia portion. The first half hour was Philadelphia and local, you know, Jersey, etc. Then they would go network. So he would give guys like me a shot on the local to see if the record would do anything. So when I was doing the ADCO record, I just so happened to play him the demo. It was a demo as far as I was concerned. And I played it for him, and he flipped, and he said, go over and see this guy, Bernie Benick. And over and saw Bernie, and Bernie was starting a label called Swan Records. I had no idea that Dick had anything to do with it. But naturally, he took the record because Dick told him to take it. When I went back to FIL, back to Bandstand, to tell Dick that we made a deal, which he already knew, I told him about the name. I said, I won't be able to use my name because I'm signed to Atlantic. And he said, don't worry about that, I'll take care of that. But in the meantime, he said, this sounds like a group, why don't you call it a group name? Dick was a god, so if Dick said to me, I'm going to call you Moron, I would have said, okay. But he gave me the name.
And you did all the vocals on this record, right?
Yeah, I overlapped a guitar, and I overlapped myself singing like five or six times. What I ended up with was like 12 or 13 tracks from a two-track machine.
Great sound, Click Clack, Dickie Doo, and the Don'ts on the Swan Record label. I'm Ronnie Allen, and I'm so pleased to be talking with Jerry Granahan, certainly one of the more versatile people that I've interviewed. And we're going to move on to a recording in which you actually used your real name, Jerry Granahan. It was on the Sunbeam label. And back in 1958, the whole big thing was sack dresses or chemises, and people either loved them or they hated them. And Jerry, you made a record in which you hated them.
Well, what happened there was I was preparing for a session with Arnold Golan, and we were in his office in 1619 Broadway, the Brill Building. We were going over the songs that we already had picked. We had picked a couple of standards and a couple of other songs. And my manager at the time, a guy named Tommy Valenta, said, why don't you try writing something? So we sat down and we tried to write. Nothing was happening. And just then, this absolutely gorgeous girl, she was a Copa dancer, a Copa Cabana, that we knew came in the door of the office, and I looked at her, she had this dress on, and I said to her, what are you wearing that for? You have such a beautiful figure, you know, why would you hide yourself? It looks like a sack. And she said, that's what it is, it's a sack dress. So I was sitting at the piano, and she said, it's called a chemise, it's French, you know,
right.
Blah, blah, blah. So immediately, I mean, it took me only 20 minutes, and it just poured out, and that was the end of it.
I had a day. date for the hop last night. Up to her door, everything seemed right. But to my surprise, as I opened the door, I couldn't tell the front from the back, 'cause she was wearing a cigarette. Woo, what a mess. The last time I saw her, man, what a shape. Now she got a shape like an ape. No, show me, please. Not for me, please. Well, you can take back your sack, leave it hanging on the rack, and bring a sweater back. But when we arrived at the hop, started in doing the stroll. I told her I wanted to stop, but she wanted rock and roll. I told her 40 times and it really was a crime. I was talking to the back of her head. No, show me, please. Not for me, please. Well, you can take back your sack, leave it hanging on the rack, and bring the sweater back. Baby in the skin. He must have been a woman's hater. I keep wondering where the metal went. So won't you change the fat, have pity on me, please. Put her back in her dungarees. No, show me, please. That's for me, please. Well, you can take back the sack, leave it hanging on the rack, and bring the sweater back.
Jerry Granahan and No Chemise Please. You were with the Sunbeam record label. Was that related in any way to your activity with Swan Records?
No.
Was it related to ATCO?
It wasn't related to anything. I started that label with that record. Tommy was a Broadway publisher. He had shows on Broadway like Mr. Wonderful, Little Mary Sunshine, and his big one that they were writing at the time I wrote No Chemise. There were two guys, a guy named Jerry Bach and Sheldon Harnick, that were writing in the room next to me. And they were writing this kind of music that I had no idea what it was. And it ended up being Fiddle Around the Roof.
But at any rate, it was on the Sunbeam record label. It was kind of a throwaway song. It was going to be the B-side of a record called Girl of My Dreams, I believe.
It wasn't even considered a B-side. It was just thrown in on the end of the date. And I only had one chance. I took one take of that.
Well, Jerry, you've been involved actually as a recording artist on at least three top 40 hits, but this was the only one that had the name Jerry Granahan on it as the recording artist.
There was always a reason. The first one was because of Atlantic Records, I couldn't use my name.
Right.
And when it came to the Fireflies, well, the Fireflies was my very, very first group. When I first hit New York, the beginning of that group was like a movie. I was waiting at an elevator to go upstairs to see an agent as a single singer to work the Catskill Mountains. So I was going up to see an agent, and there were two guys standing there with me, and they both had guitars. And the elevator door opened, and another singer friend of mine said, "Don't even bother going up. The agent's only looking for groups." So I said to the two guys, "You guys want to be a group?" And they thought I was nuts. And then we went in, and we sat down in a little restaurant called Hanson's Drugstore, which is pretty famous for people in the music business. And we talked and talked, and I talked them into going upstairs with me and just playing a couple of chords, and I said, "I'll take the rest." They would play a chord, and I would play like two lines of a song and say, "Well, you know, we do this one, and then we do this one, and we do this one." And believe it or not, he hired us.
Now, was Richie Adams one of those people?
No. The originals were myself, Lee Reynolds, and Vinnie Rogers. This was before I ever had Chemise or Click Clack or anything.
But the Fireflies only became known in 1959. You produced a hit single called You Were Mine. Did you co-write that song?
Yeah, basically, yes. What happened was I was friends with a couple of guys who were in the jewelry business, and one of them was a songwriter. He's a co-writer of Hurt.
Timmy Euro record.
Right, right, and Elvis. His name was Jimmy Crane, and he asked me to come by the office. I went by the office. He said, look, we want to start a label. We'd like to involve you in it. So I said, okay, and we listened to some songs, and a young songwriter came in with a song that I thought was decent. So I helped him, you know, restructure the song, put it together, and then I just went into the studio, and I did the same thing I did with everything else. You know, first I did the tracks, and then I just layered my voice over and over and over again, and my secretary at the time was a girl named Rose Spagnola. She had three little neighbor friends that were like 14 years old in that area, and they wanted to see a recording session. So she just took them to see the session. And halfway through the session, I didn't like the sound. I wasn't getting the right sound. I wanted in the background, so I just told the kids, come up here.
And they became the Fireflyettes.
Yes, I think these three little teenagers got up and never sang in their life before.
The female Fireflies. They're the female voices on that record, You Were Mine?
That's it.
Wow. Now, initially, your voice was on as the lead singer of that record.
Yeah, initially it was, and I wasn't happy with that. Then Lee introduced me to Richie.
Richie Adams.
And Richie was a very quiet, almost non-existing type of guy. And then when I heard him sing, I said, yeah, this is the guy for it. And that was it.
This record came out on the Ribbon label.
Right.
So the interesting thing is, your three hit singles were on three different labels. Swan,
right.
And then Sunbeam, and then Ribbon. And we're going to listen to it right now. These are the Fireflies, along with the Firefly Girls, singing You Were Mine. You had those three hits, and a lot of people might think you have three hits. You know, you think you own the world, and all you got to do is just, okay, well, just the money tree is in the recording studio, so you just record a few more songs, you're going to get tons more hits. It's not that easy, though, is it?
No, it's not. I took a lot more shots than most people every time I had a chance. Like, for instance, George Golden, who you probably know from Gone Records. I looked up to George as one of the top guys in the business. And every time he'd see me, he'd ask me when I was going to record for him or when I was going to do this. And I finally went in and did a couple of sides with him. No contract, no nothing. Just went in and did it. No matter what it was, if I had a chance to go in the studio, I would go in.
I know, you sure did. According to the liner notes on the Caprice CD, and by the way, this is a good time to acknowledge that this particular CD was put together by yourself and a gentleman named Danny Burden.
Danny is, to me, he's an oldie genius. He found records of mine that I forgot I even recorded.
So, Danny, we thank you. Jerry thanks you. And we're going to continue now, and we're going to actually talk about the Caprice label in a moment, but you actually finished the decade of the 50s, according to this, with four more releases on Sunbeam, five on Swan, and two on the Gone label. But as the 60s began, you did something that kind of changed your life. You signed with another record company, which is called Canadian American, which was most known for having Santo and Johnny, who did Sleepwalk and Teardrop, and, of course, Linda Scott, who did I've Told Every Little Star, Don't Bet Money, Honey, and I don't know why. You were a recording artist, and you released a song called When Irish Eyes Are Smiling. It's not a record that became a hit, but it was kind of an interesting treatment, up-tempo. It was kind of like what Conway Twitty did with Danny Boy. Started very slow, and then you picked it up and did it as a kind of a rockabilly.
At the beginning, I didn't sign with Canadian American to start with. The guy that started Canadian was with me at Sunbeam, Neil Gallagher.
Neil Gallagher.
When he started, he was a general manager of Canadian American. He called me over and asked me if I would come over and just be like an A&R person for him or whatever. That's when we came up with Santo and Johnny and Linda Scott and all the rest of them. Then I decided to make a couple of records, and I did a couple of records for them. That was one of them.
There's a tear in your eye, and I'm wondering why. For it never should be there at all. 'Cause when your Irish eyes are smiling, it's like the morning spring. Just a little bit of Irish laughter. You can hear, you can make those angels sing. When your Irish heart is happy, all the world seems so bright and gay. That's when your Irish eyes are smiling. Yeah, you see it smile away. Yeah, all the world seems so bright and gay. That's when your Irish eyes are smiling. Yeah, you still mine. You still mine. You still my heart away. Yeah, you still mine. Oh, you took my heart. You still mine.
Jerry Granahan and When Irish Eyes Are Smiling. All right, Jerry, you were at Canadian American, and at some point you decided to form your own label.
What happened was I was going to go on my way. Things weren't moving fast enough for me there. So rather than him let me go, get away and go someplace else, he offered to distribute a label for me. So that's when I decided to start Caprice, and he was basically like a silent partner. But the label was mine.
Who named it Caprice?
My secretary said something to the fact that I was very capricious, you know, in a conversation. And somebody just took Capricious and Caprice, and that was it.
The first few releases on Caprice were not hits, but they are on this particular CD. We're not going to play any of them during this show, but they were by the Wildwoods and the Alley Oops group and Marty Hill. And then the next recording on Caprice that's on here did become a hit, and we're going to talk a little bit about a singer right now named Janie Grant, who I had the pleasure of doing a couple of interviews with, including one recently.
She was one of the sweetest kids I ever met in the record business. She was loaded with talent. She was only 16 years old. She had a knack of writing cute little songs, and what had happened was, again, my secretary Rose, who was like my sister, she was one of my closest friends, met this kid, Ron Striano, who was also kind of a genius with a guitar, and he was just a kid, 15, I think he was. But I think he was going to school with Janie, or he knew Janie in some way. So he asked me if I would listen to her. And she came over, I listened to her, and I fell in love with her. I said, of course. So we took her in and did Triangle right off the bat.
Now, she was not Janie Grant. Her name was really Rosemarie Casilli.
Yeah, Rosemarie Casilli, right.
In fact, these days, that's what she is. These days, she's more Rosemarie Casilli than she is Janie Grant. Was it a coincidence that she got the name Janie Grant? Did you name her Janie Grant? I mean, you had used Jerry Grant.
My memory is not that good, but I think it's more of a coincidence. I don't think we were thinking, you know, that
Jerry Grant.
Yeah, I don't think that ever occurred to me anyhow. We're sitting down at a meeting and we're just throwing names around, and it's possible that somebody put the ties together, but honestly, Ron, I don't remember.
But do you remember the recording session of Triangle? Hutch Davey was the arranger of
yep.
that?
Yep, Hutch did the charts.
So he was the arranger. Were you the producer?
Oh, yeah. We had Hutch as a house arranger. I would work with the acts, and everything would be all laid out, and he'd come in and he'd do the charts, and we did some wonderful dates together because we didn't just run into the studio. I did a lot of preparation ahead of time. He was excellent.
He wrote charts for Janie Grant and also the Angels, and he also
right.
did James Ray, and he also did Linda Scott.
Right.
Let's listen to the recording that made Janie Grant a star. And this is a song that she wrote, and it's called Triangle. That was Triangle by Janie Grant, and all of these interviews are on my Ronnie's Radio page, and you can access that by visiting the Jersey Girls Sing website. Jersey Girls happen to be Denise Ferry and Bernadette Carroll. They were two-thirds of the backup singers on Lou Christie's number one hit, Lightning Strikes. www.jerseygirlssing.com. That's jerseygirlssing.com, and then just click on Ronnie's Radio page, and you'll hear any of these interviews, including the one that I did with Janie Grant, and you'll also, of course, be hearing this one. And some people are hearing this on WNJC 1360 AM in the Philadelphia area. We're serving the entire world, Jerry. We really
That's
are.
Great.
And this is going to be 24/7 on demand. Anybody's going to be able to listen to this. We're going to do one more by Janie Grant, and it's not one that you normally hear by Janie Grant. This happens to be an unreleased recording done by Janie Grant and Jerry Granahan. How did this come about? Gimme, gimme. Do you remember it?
There's a lot of vagueness in this. I do remember doing it. What I'm trying to remember is why we did it or how it came about or where the songs came from.
Yeah, it was never released.
I don't know if we wrote the songs.
The one we're going to play is Gimme Gimme, and it was never released as a single. Janie actually provided me with this when we did an interview back in 2001, and I then provided Danny with copies of this and the flip side, Youngin' in Love. But we're going to hear Gimme Gimme right now. This is, since Jerry's my guest here, I'm going to say it's Jerry Granahan and Janie Grant. Was Jerry Granahan and Janie Grant. Jerry, you could have been Jerry and Janie.
Yeah. You
missed your calling.
If it got out and happened, we probably would have been trouncing around as Janie and Jerry.
I am Ronnie Allen, and I am talking with record producer, recording artist, songwriter, record company executive, disc jockey, janitor, and what else? Did I leave anything out?
I was the second man on the moon.
You were the second man on the moon.
Yep.
After you heard Neil Armstrong say what he did, what was your comment?
My comment was, go out and buy my new record.
Okay. I remember that, of course.
We're going to come now to a discussion of a group called the Angels. They did not start out as the Angels. They started out as the Starlets and were managed by Tom DeSillis. The lead singer was Linda Malzone. There were two sisters named Barbara and Jigs Albert and Bernadette Carroll. P.S. I Love You was the biggest single that they had on the Astro label. And then the Starlets kind of broke up. Linda Malzone left the group. Bernadette left the group. And then the two sisters, Barbara and Jigs, basically decided to form another group. Some people would say that the Starlets evolved into the Angels, but that's kind of a matter of interpretation. And somewhere along the line, they found a singer named Linda Jansen.
When they came to me, she was one of the girls. She was one of the three.
The group had already been formed by that point.
Oh, yeah. They were known in certain parts of Jersey and I guess in New York, too. But again, my friend Ron Striano, who knew the girls, brought me to them. And I went over to see a group called the Rascals.
It wasn't the Rascals.
Yeah, it was the Rascals.
They eventually became the Young Rascals and then the Rascals again. That same group?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I went over to see them. And while I was there, we sat down and talked to the girls. And then the girls came into the office. And, you know, I just had to hear them once.
At that time, Linda was brought in to be the lead singer.
Right. You know, till today, she is probably my favorite girl lead singer of all the girl groups around. I thought she had the greatest sound. I was also impressed with the sound that Barbara and Jigs came up with.
Now tell me how the recording Till came about.
Going through songs, I was a fan of Tony Bennett's. And that's something he did earlier. It was a standard song, so we went with the standard.
And once again, Hutch Davy wrote the charts.
That's right. I broke my butt on that record. I not only when I finished producing it and putting it together, et cetera, et cetera, I went out on the road myself. I made a tour. I went to all the major cities, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Detroit. I went to record stores. I went to One Stops. I went to disc jockeys because I believe that that record was a hit.
Have you had any contact with Linda Jansen in the past 10 zillion years?
No, it's a shame that, you know, my career went on and I guess she got married or whatever. And then that's it. I lost contact with her.
Linda was the original lead singer of the Angels.
Correct.
From 1961, here are the Angels with Linda Jansen doing the lead singing on Till.
Till the moon deserts the sky, till all the seas run dry.
That was Till by the Angels. I'm Ronnie Allen, so pleased to be talking with Jerry Granahan. We are going to play one more Angels record in just a moment, but first, Matilda, a fan of yours, sent me an email because she knew that I was going to be interviewing you. She said, is there any chance that I could just get on the phone and just say hello? So, Jerry, this is Matilda, a big Jerry Granahan fan.
Big, big fan.
Glad to hear that. You're the one out there, huh? Well, what town are you from?
Originally, I'm from Hillside. I can't believe I'm talking to Jerry Granahan.
You're also talking to Jerry Grant. You're talking to Dickie Doo. You're talking to 10 different people at once.
Yeah, right? Wow. That's great.
I have to go to a doctor every once in a while, you know, get the personality straightened out.
Matilda, you like the Angels recordings?
I love them. I have, and the Angels sing.
Have you ever met Jerry Granahan?
Actually, I have. I sang the lead on Till.
Oh, you got to be kidding. This isn't Linda. Linda, how are you, sweetheart?
I'm fine. I'm very fine. How are you?
I'm great. I feel much better now that I'm talking to you. Linda, what happened when you left the group? Where did you go?
Where did I go?
My wife is sitting here while we're doing this interview, and I met my wife through the Angels.
You're kidding.
After you left, we started auditioning girl on top of girl on top of girl. And
uh-huh.
And she had just won the Miss Rhode Island contest or something, and she was sent to me by a friend, and she ended up going out with Barbara and Jegs.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that funny?
Isn't it?
Wow.
She went on to have her own record. She was on Epic and a couple other labels, the UA. But anyhow, I told her, you know, I said, man, I had such a crush on the lead singer from the Angels. The only thing is, you were too tall for me.
Linda, thank you so much for joining us and giving Jerry Granahan the surprise of his life.
It's been my pleasure.
The next record we're going to play happens to be by the Angels. Linda, you're here. What can you tell us about Cry Baby Cry?
It's always been one of my favorite songs. It's a singer's song. I think Jerry knows what I mean by that. It's a torchy song, and I love torchy songs. I love to perform them. I love songs with feeling, and that definitely has everything. And it's always been one of my favorites.
The writer of the song happens to be Morris Bailey.
Right. I remember when we went to his home in Philadelphia, and he played it for us. And I thought to myself, I have to record that song. That's me.
Okay, so introduce it right now. What are we going to hear right now?
We're going to hear my second recording on the Caprice label entitled Cry Baby Cry.
Baby Cry, the Angels. Jerry, we're going to move on. It's going to be difficult to follow what just happened with anything else, but we do want to feature a couple more recording acts. One of them was on Caprice, and then the other one happens to be an act that you produced and a single that you produced that is one of the most enduring oldies of all time. We're going to use that to close the show. But right now, we're going to get to an artist who was ill-fated, sadly, talking about James Ray. Had one big hit called If You Gotta Make a Fool of Somebody. What's the story with him?
You know, when I found James, I believed I had another Ray Charles. He was something different. He had a phenomenal sound, phenomenal ear. And he was the whole package. And he just didn't live long enough. I was fortunate enough to get 12 or so songs out of him, records, and then he left us. But what he didn't realize, the time that he spent with us and the records that he made, he left an impression with a lot of people. You talk about an underground, a CD just came out in England. It's called John Lennon's Jukebox. John Lennon had this jukebox in his house, and he had 40 of his favorite songs that he used to listen to day in and day out, and he said that they gave him inspiration for his writing. And two of the songs in it were two of James Ray's songs, and If You Gotta Make a Fool of Somebody was one of them. And so they put that CD out, and I allowed them to put the record in it.
James Ray, If You Gotta Make a Fool of Somebody.
By the way, Rudy Clark was the writer of that. That's not the only thing James had. In his album, we had another Rudy Clark song called I've Got My Mind Set on You. It wasn't his second release. It was going to be his third release. When he passed, we decided not to release it. But 25 or 30 years later, here comes George Harrison, another Beatle, with another James Ray record.
But this is the original recording.
Right.
Here is James Ray and I've Got My Mind Set on You.
Everywhere I go, you know that love.
James Ray and the original recording of I've Got My Mind Set on You. Did you move away from the Caprice label, actually, when you went to United Artists?
Yeah, what I did was I just put the label on the shelf, and United Artists offered me a deal, and instead of going with the label, I just went over there as the head of A&R, and that's how I ended up at United Artists. And it was a good move for me because some good things came out of it.
A&R stands for Artist and Repertoire, but what does an A&R man mean? Does it include producing?
A&R man or producer, both the same, probably the most thankless job in the business. I mean, there's a book out now by Phil Rameau, who produces Billy Joel and Barbra Streisand, and Phil's an old friend of mine. You know, he says it all in that book, that the producer is the glue between the artist, the song, the record company, the artist's life. It's a thankless job. It really is. And I think that the most prominent things in the music business is the songwriter, the song, and the producer.
Who were some of the acts that you produced when you were with United Artists?
Jay and the American, Patty Duke, Franny and Tyshu. Made a comedy album with Pat Cooper. Leroy Holmes and I did Jimmy Roselli live at Carnegie Hall.
Let's just talk very briefly about the musical talents in your family.
My wife was a singer.
Your wife was actually very briefly the lead singer of the Angels.
Right.
It was for about 10 minutes, wasn't it?
A little longer than that.
Okay. Carrie Downs?
Yep.
Is that what the name, the professional name?
Went on to Epic and then on to United Artists. My oldest daughter is a national choreographer. She's done some movies and did some choreography for NSYNC, Jerianne Jenga. And my baby daughter is an anchor on television. She was 10 years at ABC here in New England as an anchor, and she also sings and dances. And now she has her own radio talk show here. Her name is Tara.
And you live presently where?
We're in New England. We're up in the Rhode Island area.
Jerry, thank you so much. We got to do it again sometime and talk at length and maybe play some of your recordings from your later days, you know, with United Artists. We're going to play one to close the show right now that you produced for Jay and the Americans called Caramia. What can you tell us about this recording?
The group was kind of on their way there for a while. Lieber and Stoller had produced one thing with them, and Artie Ripp had something with them. But when I got them, they were in a tailspin. Their career was slowed down quite a bit. And Jay kept bugging me about this song, Caramia, Caramia, and I saw him sing it live, and nobody else wanted to cut the song. And I said, we'll do it. So we went in, and right off the bat.
Was that the first record you produced by them?
First one I did with them.
Came out in 1965, got to number 4 in the country, but in terms of the amount of airplay it gets on oldies stations, this record, in many respects, was a number 1 record. It still gets so much heavy play all over.
When that record came out, it was fighting the Beatles and God knows who else. There were a lot of great records out when that record came out.
We're going to listen to it right now to close the show. This oldie is eternal. Produced by Jerry Granahan. This is Jay and the Americans, Caramia. Good night, Jerry, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Ron.
Well, that's the show. Thank you, Jerry Granahan, and also thank you, Linda Jansen, for surprising Jerry, and I'm sure surprising oldies fans around the country and throughout the world. Right now, a couple of bonus tracks by Jerry. The first one is up-tempo, and the second one isn't. This is a recording that Jerry did with the Five Satins, who were actually billed on the record as the Wildwoods. Dance, girl, dance. Finally, this is Jerry's touching performance of the great ballad from Rodgers and Hammerstein's Carousel. You'll Never Walk Alone.
When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high. And don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm is a golden sky and a sweet silver song of a lark. Walk on through the wind. Walk on through the rain, though your dreams be dark and blown. Walk on,
walk on,
walk on,
walk on,
with hope,
walk on,
in your heart,
walk on,
and you never,
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 never. Oh.